I want you to imagine something for a second. You have poured your absolute heart and soul into a project. And I'm not talking about, a weekend thing. I mean, you are grinding, giving it everything you have for 2 straight years.
So really high stakes, high effort.
Exactly. And at the very, very end, on your last day, you look at the results. And there's nothing there. The scoreboard is just a big zero. You walk away feeling like you didn't just fail, but that you completely wasted 2 years of your life.
Oh, that's a heavy feeling.
Wow.
That's the kind of thing that keeps people up at night, right? The fear that all our effort just doesn't matter in the end.
Right. But now, I want you to fast forward. Let's say 40 years go by. You're living your life. Maybe you've even forgotten the specific sting of that old failure. And then, out of nowhere, you find out that the one project you thought was a total disaster actually changed history for an entire family. For generations.
That sounds like the plot of a movie, doesn't it? Something written to make us all feel a bit better about our own shortcomings. But it's actually the real theme of the two sources we're unpacking today. It's this idea of the long game.
Or the texts call it planting seeds.
Exactly. The idea that you can plant something, walk away, and have no earthly idea that a forest is growing up behind you. And to explore this, we're going to a very specific, very beautiful place. We're heading to Finland.
We are. And we should probably set the scene properly, because the sources we have, these are personal accounts from Brentich Nielsen and Bruce Smith. They are so rooted in the Finnish experience. So when we talk about the capital, it's not Helsinki, it's...
Helsinki?
Helsinki. Yes, that crispness. We're going to do our best today to honor that language. We'll be saying names like Sanekland, Lettinen, and Heidi with that, that authentic Finnish intonation, the stress on the first syllable. I've been practicing. So our mission today is to dive into these two accounts. Both of these men were missionaries in Finland, and they both had this experience where they reached their absolute limit, what one of them calls man's extremity.
And that breaking point is precisely where the real story begins. It's this fascinating contrast between the human perspective, which is so impatient and focused on immediate results, and this much broader generational view that only reveals itself decades later. It really challenges how we define success.
Okay, so let's jump into the first account. This is from Brent H. Nielsen. The year is 1976. He's a young missionary in Helsinki, and he finds what missionaries call a golden family. So for those who might not know the lingo, what exactly does that mean?
A golden family is, well, it's the ideal scenario. They're not just being polite. They are actively looking for something more spiritually. They're receptive to the message. And this is key. They seem ready to make the changes that come with it. It's what every missionary hopes to find.
And for Nielsen, that was the Eklund family. Brother and Sister Eklund and their kids. He says they were just wonderful, kind people. Everything seems to be lining up perfectly.
Right.
But there's a snag. Pretty big one.
Right. It comes down to the father, Sven Eklund. He's a good man. He believes what he's hearing, but he just hits a brick wall when it comes to the financial side of things, specifically tithing.
Yeah, he's looking at his monthly bills, his family's needs, and he can't make the math work in his head.
Which is a very real, very pragmatic barrier. You know, we think of conversion as this purely spiritual thing, but for Sven, it's about survival. It's, can I feed my family if I do this? That's not a lack of faith. It's the weight of responsibility.
So Nielsen and his companion, an elder Lettinen, I love that name, Lettinen.
Yeah.
They work with the Eklunds for weeks, trying to help Sven get past this.
Right.
And it all comes down to the wire. I mean, it's Nielsen's very last day in Finland. He's about to fly home.
Wow, the climax of his whole 2-year mission, the buzzer beater moment.
They go to Sven Eklund one last time. They lay it all on the table, invite him to be baptized. And Sven just looks at them and says, I'm not ready.
That's got to be crushing.
Nielsen writes that he left his mission a bit discouraged. And I think that's a massive understatement. He actually wondered if he'd been successful at all. He finds this one incredible person, Sven, and can't, close the deal. He leaves feeling like a failure.
And this is where that whole gardener metaphor is so important. Nielsen is suffering from what I'd call the harvester's fallacy. He thinks that if the fruit doesn't appear while he's the one holding the watering can, then the plant is dead.
But that's not how it works.
Not at all. He leaves, but the seed is still in the soil.
And it didn't stay there for long. This part really surprised me. Nielsen gets home, he's barely unpacked, and just 30 days later, 1 month, he gets a letter. The Eklunds were baptized.
Wow, the timing there is so significant.
Why do you think that is? Why did it happen a month later, after he was gone?
Well, sometimes the person who plants the seed can't be the one who sees it sprout. Maybe Sven needed the pressure to be off. Maybe he needed to make the decision entirely on his own terms, without those two young men looking on. It becomes less about pleasing them and more about his own commitment. The seed needed a little room to breathe.
So that was obviously a huge relief for Nielsen. But if the story ended there, it'd just be a nice little anecdote. But it doesn't end there, not even close. This is where the ripple effect starts.
The multi-generational ripple effect. This is where the story just explodes in scale.
So years pass. Nielsen's a lawyer now. He's married, living in Twin Falls, Idaho, just living his life.
Mm-hmm.
One day he comes home, picks up the church news from the mailbox. He's flipping through it. And he sees an announcement for a new stake president in Helsinki.
And for context, a stake president is a major leadership role. It's like being a regional director, overseeing multiple congregations, a very significant calling.
Huge. And he looks at the name in the paper. It's Sven Eklund. Nielsen says he just started to cry right there in his living room. He thought back to those hard years, that feeling of failure. And here's his failed investigator, leading the entire church in that area.
It just validates everything, doesn't it? It proves the struggle wasn't wasted. It's a reminder that our timeline is not the only one that matters, but the story keeps going.
It does. Later in life, Nielsen meets a church leader, Elder Ronald Rasband, who mentions he was just at the dedication of the Helsinki Finland Temple. And he asks Nielsen, hey, do you happen to know a guy named Sven Eklund?
It's a small world, or a very connected one.
Nielsen says, of course he does. And Rasband tells him that Sven Eklund was the chairman of the open house for the entire temple dedication. He was the central figure in a massive, historic event for the church in Finland. And again, Nielsen is just in tears.
It's that difference between a transactional view of success and the long view. On his last day in 1976, the transaction was incomplete. He failed. But from the perspective of decades later, that one contact was a pillar of the faith in an entire country.
And there's one final twist to this that it honestly gave me goosebumps. In 2015, we're talking nearly 40 years later, Nielsen goes back to Finland. He's a general authority now, a senior leader in the church. And he's speaking to the young missionaries.
A full circle moment.
Totally. He's standing there looking at all these kids who are the same age he was back then, and he decides to tell them the story of Sven Eklund to teach them about planting seeds. He tells the whole thing, the rejection, the letter, all of it. And when he's done, a young missionary in the audience raises his hand.
Don't tell me.
The missionary stands up and says, Sven Eklund is my grandpa.
That's just incredible.
You just imagine the feeling in that room. Nielsen realized in that instant that there were now three generations of Eklunds in the church. He thought he failed in 76, but he had actually helped start a legacy that was literally sitting right in front of him wearing a name tag.
It's the perfect illustration of the theme. You're not just touching one life, you're potentially touching their children and their grandchildren.
Oh.
The butterfly effect in action.
It really is. But let's shift to our second source, because Nielsen's story is about the long timeline. But this next one, this is about the intensity of the moment, the extremity.
Right, this is from Bruce Smith. And he frames his entire experience around this powerful quote by Melvin J. Ballard, man's extremity is God's opportunity.
I love that quote. But what does extremity really mean here? It's more than just having a hard day, right?
Oh, much more. It means you've reached the absolute end of your own resources, physically, mentally, emotionally. You have nothing left to give. The idea is that the divine can't, or maybe won't, step in until we've tried everything we possibly can on our own. You have to get to the edge of the cliff before the bridge appears.
And Smith was definitely at his extremity. He and his companion were trying to reopen an area called East Helsinki. Mm. And from his description, it was just a brutal grind.
Grueling. They were both new, inexperienced. They had this tracting book, which was basically a log of every door they knocked on.
Yeah.
And it sounds like just the most depressing thing to read.
Yeah, he says the comments next to the addresses were things like slam or NI for not interested. Just page after page of slam, slam, NI, slam.
Imagine the psychological toll of that. You're facing constant rejection in a foreign country in the cold. It would just wear you down to nothing.
So here's the scene. It's a Saturday. They are exhausted. Smith's companion just looks at him and says, let's just go home. This is pointless. And honestly, you can't blame him.
That's the moment. That's the extremity. It would have been the most reasonable thing in the world to just pack it in for the day.
But Smith starts negotiating. He's almost desperate. He says, just one more row of these apartment buildings. They do it. Nothing. His companion is begging to go. So Smith says, okay, just three more staircases in this last building.
It's that last little bit of grit, pushing just a tiny bit further than what feels possible.
They get to the very last staircase of the very last building. They climb to the third floor. It's the last door. Smith knocks. A mother answers. She doesn't say a word. She just backs up and lets them in.
The silence is so powerful there. It's almost like she was waiting for them.
He says they walk into this small living room, and the family is just squished onto a tiny couch. It's the mother, her daughters, some boys, even neighborhood kids, all just sitting there.
And that door only opened after they pushed past the point where they wanted to quit. If they had stopped two staircases earlier, which would have been logical, this never happens.
But getting in the door was just the start. Smith's companion gets transferred almost immediately, so he's left with a greenie, a brand new missionary. And Smith admits he barely knew the language. So you have two guys who can't really speak Finnish trying to teach these complex ideas.
He uses a great analogy. He says he felt like the little drummer boy.
Meaning?
Meaning he didn't have any fancy gifts to offer, no eloquence, no deep knowledge. All he had was his willingness to be there, to, you know, bang his little drum. He says he used pictures, his hands, his eyes, his heart. Because his words were failing him.
And it worked. The family felt that sincerity. But one person stood out. A teenage daughter named Heidi. Smith describes her as looking and acting like Joan of Arc.
That's a powerful image. It suggests she wasn't just a passive listener. She had this fierce spirit, ready for a cause.
Exactly. So they start teaching the family, and they invite them to church. The source material even has this image of them all walking to the bus stop in the snow, all bundled up in their coats. And the church building itself wasn't some grand cathedral.
No, it was a converted neighborhood grocery store on the ground floor of an apartment building. Very humble.
So they get there, and Heidi sees a rack of pamphlets. She grabs one about the word of wisdom, the church's health code, and Smith's heart just sinks.
Because he knows what it says. No smoking, no alcohol. And he knows smoking, for many people at that time, was just a part of life.
He thought, we've lost her. That's it. We're done. He's projecting all his own fears onto the situation.
But you can't control how the seed lands. You just have to drop it and see what happens.
The next time they visit, Heidi is holding that pamphlet. And she tells them, I've tried to stop smoking before, and I always failed. Smith is probably holding his breath. And then she says, but when I learned that God wanted me to, that's all I needed. And she had stopped, just like that.
It's such a profound insight into motivation. Her own willpower wasn't enough, but a higher purpose was. And notice what Smith realized. He says he was just the delivery boy.
The delivery boy.
Yes. The pamphlet had the information. The spirit did the converting. His only job was to get the pamphlet from the church rack into her hands. It totally redefines his role.
It takes all the pressure off, doesn't it? You just have to be the one to knock on the door.
And look at the result of that one door, the one at the top of the absolute last staircase. Heidi and her mother were baptized. Heidi later married, raised a family, and they became missionaries themselves.
Smith writes this one incredible line. He says, if I would have counted the word slam written beside 1,000 names, it would have been worth it to be welcome once.
That's the return on investment for planting seeds. 1,000 rejections are just erased by one generational yes. The math is completely different.
So we have these two amazing stories. Nielsen feels like he failed, but his seed grew into this massive family tree with Sven Eklund. And Smith pushes himself to the point of collapse to find one open door that changes Heidi's life forever.
Both stories just completely dismantle our typical definitions of success and failure. We want immediate feedback. Did I get the promotion? Did I get the applause? But this suggests the real work, the most important work, is often in trouble for a very, very long time.
It is the long game. Nielsen couldn't see the future state president in the worried father. Smith couldn't see Joan of Arc from the other side of a slammed door.
And for you, the person listening right now, this is so crucial. You might be learning a new skill, raising a kid, building a company, and you might just feel like you're hearing slam after slam. You might feel like you're at your absolute extremity.
But you have no idea which effort is the one, which one is the seed. You don't know if that one extra phone call or that one difficult conversation or that one small act of service is the thing that's going to bloom in 40 years.
Exactly. We judge our days by the harvest we reap, when maybe we should be judging them by the seeds we plant.
So here's the question we want to leave you with. Think about the one thing you're most frustrated with right now. The place where you feel like you are failing. If you knew with 100% certainty that this specific failure was actually the seed for your greatest success 3 generations from now, how would you treat it differently right now?
That changes everything. It turns frustration into a kind of stewardship.
It really does. Well, that's our deep dive for today. Thanks for exploring the forests and staircases of Finland with us. Keep planting those seeds.